Welcome to The Next Step. This is Father Vasque and welcoming you back to The Next Step, a series of podcasts dedicated to looking at life, delving into the very fabric of being, all examined through the ancient lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In Issues Mission, the Youth Ministry Center in Glendale, and of course is brought to you exclusively by the good folks at the Apostles Net. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. So good to have you back. It's great to be here too. I can't tell you enough how exciting these few weeks have been doing these podcasts, because it's something fresh. And from your feedback, from the messages you've been sending me, I'm so encouraged. I'm encouraged to continue this because I know we're doing something right. And especially the messages I received last week about our podcast, about pain, about suffering. I know it struck a nerve that goes across continents. It goes across our man-made boundaries. It's the one thing that unites us, our ability to endure pain and to get through this life with all of its difficulties. So I really appreciate your comments, your feedback. If you want to drop us some feedback, you can do so at feedback@apostle.net, or else call our new feedback call number, which is 626 area code in the United States, 275-AMEN, a very appropriate number. Anyway, this week has been a very exciting week, especially for us working within the genocide prevention community. I know that everyone who's been working on that is very excited that this week Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir was brought up on charges of genocide against the people of Darfur. I think this is a milestone, something very important. We're working for justice, and sometimes when you look at some of the pain and suffering in the world, you ask, where is God in all of this? And, you know, he's in our ability to reach out, in our ability to help others. I'm reminded of the words of Gandhi when he says, "I can see that in the midst of darkness, light persists. Hence, I gather that God is life, truth, light. He is love. He is the supreme good." And if you go on reading some of Gandhi's work and everything, he comes down to, well, where is that revelation of truth? Where is that love? Where is that light going to come out? But through us. He continues in another piece of writing. He says, "I may be a despicable person, but when truth speaks through me, I am invincible." And I sort of felt that this week, especially when al-Bashir, these charges were brought against him. You know the kind of difficulties that the people of Darfur, people of Sudan, have been enduring these past several years. It's the same thing that the people of Rwanda endured. It's the same thing that happened in Cambodia, in Nazi Germany, of course, in the Armenian Genocide back in Turkey in 1915. People who have experienced pain have an obligation, a special obligation, I mean beyond that of other people, to bring to light, to bring to forum these issues that are just so bizarre. When you talk about the word inhumane, you can't imagine what inhumane is until you get to the level of genocide, until you get to that point where you're talking about eliminating a gene pool, eliminating an entire people. And that's what we're fighting against. That's what all this prevention is about, preventing genocide. So I'm encouraged, and I would encourage all of our listeners to get online, get hooked up, especially at action.savedarfur.org/campaign/anniversary. Make your voice heard. It's happening to people in Darfur today. It's going to happen to someone else unless we are the ones who get up and we make some noise. If truth is going to get out, if we have a way of making God's presence in the world, it's going to be up to us to take those steps. But right now I'd like to pick up like where we left off, not necessarily exactly in an analog session. In other words, not following the stream that we were on last week, but following the spirit of last week. And so today's Bible passage, I'm going to go to Matthew chapter 4, verse 18. This takes place immediately after Jesus' baptism. If you remember, Jesus is baptized and then he begins his ministry. He begins his ministry with a 40-day period of seclusion. He goes out to the wilderness where we're told that he, for 40 days and 40 nights, he fasts. And at the end of that fast is tempted and renounces all those temptations. And at the end of it, we see him appearing to begin his ministry. He begins his ministry in a fashion that should be a model for everyone who begins their life, their life choice, a way of focused, of a focused vision on where they're going. Jesus stands up in the temple of that time. He recites these words, and this is now found in the Gospel of Luke chapter 4. I did say Matthew chapter 4. That's the passage we're going to be looking at today. But before he begins his ministry, he goes into the temple, and there he tells us what his ministry is going to be about. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor, sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." This basically becomes his mission. And when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy or we talk about church, it has to follow that if the church is the actual continuation of Jesus Christ's ministry, this has to be the mission of the church. What does this mean? The Spirit of the Lord is upon him, of course, because he's anointed him to preach good news to the poor. You know, this is so important, the difference of Christianity, of what Jesus had to preach. It is not a religion that is reserved for the elite, for those in a higher class. It is a religion that goes beyond class, that goes beyond all of the markings that humans make. In other words, everyone, rich and poor, are accepted into the kingdom. Sick and healthy, living and those that are dead, yes, not necessarily a death by physical death, but those who no longer see a necessity to live, who feel themselves all but dead, here is an opportunity to connect back to life. He says, "He has sent me to proclaim release to the captive." Who are the captives? The people in jail? Or is it you and me? Those of us who are captives in our lives, so filled with fears, so filled with anxieties and worries about tomorrow that we fail to see that life has to be lived. He says, "I've come to give recovery of sight to the blind." You think those are the people without eyeballs, without anything in their eye sockets? Certainly not. You and me, it's talking about our blindness to the beauty in life. How many of you today drove through some beautiful areas and didn't even take the time to look around? And I'm not advocating to look too much. If you live in California like I do, you know most people just drive aimlessly. But take a moment today to look around at the beauty of life, at the beauty around you, at the clouds in the air, at the trees. If nothing else, look at the eyes of a child or someone near you and see the presence of God. And so Jesus says, "I've come to give liberty to the oppressed." Who gets that liberty? Well, all of us. It's not anything more than the oppression that we live in, the oppression of life that keeps us away from seeing all of the beauty. And when we talk about love being incarnate in Jesus Christ, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about love coming and touching each and every one of us, taking that form in Jesus, who he was able to show us a path. Okay, so let's take a look at the passage I was talking about. Matthew chapter 4, verse 18. Now this is Jesus showing up right after his seclusion, right after he's made these pronouncements about where his direction is going, what he's going to be doing, and he now begins to call his troops, the people who can do the work that is out there. And it says, as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Or more inclusive language, fishers of people. And the passage continues saying, immediately they left their nets and followed him. Now think how powerful something has to be that you're immediately drawn to it. I mean, you know, you go into a store, you immediately see something that you like, and we called it impulsive buying. But you don't change your entire life for that. Impulsive decisions are made every day, but you don't go ahead and leave everything, family, home. These people left everything. They went a different way. When we talk about turning around completely, this is beyond that. This is just abandoning everything and following what was important for them. What was important? An opportunity to connect to the divine, to be able to preach that good news, the opportunity to tap into that truth, to that love, to something beyond themselves. And what does it say? They left everything immediately and they followed him. In Matthew chapter 13, we read a few parables that Jesus uses along the same lines of this. You find this in the same gospel, chapter 13. He says, he told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. In other words, it was the leaven was inclusive, the entire thing leavened. Or it talks about when the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys that field. Or the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought it. So you think about what this call is about. They're being called to this ultimate pleasure of life, to be able to be in the presence of love, to be able to pass along that love. And they immediately pick up on that. Now, how many times do we get that opportunity in life? You say, well, sure, if Jesus walked by me and said, follow me, I'd leave everything. But do you understand that Jesus is already doing that? Do you understand that right now he's talking to you and saying, come and follow me? How? Well, in the small relationships, in your ability to love others. Yes, it's difficult. It's difficult to love your neighbor. It's difficult to love your family members. But the ultimate difficulty is to love your enemy. It's very, very difficult. Just as difficult as it was for these fishermen to drop everything and to follow Jesus. But they did. Why? Because the prize was big. The prize is something that only you will ever know. How important and how beautiful it is in your life. Right now, what we're going to do is we're going to do an interview with a young man, Ryan Talalian. He's a deacon in the Armenian Church. Maybe we could ask him what that means, a deacon. I know you guys know I'm a father, and I guess there's these deacons, and there's a few other people that float around. We'll find out what that's all about, but I'm really excited. I've known Ryan for many years. He's with us in Glendale right now, and I thought it'd be nice if we could spend a few minutes. So, Ryan, welcome.
Thank you, Dad. It's great to be here.
You're a student at St. Narcisse, is it?
That's right, in New Rochelle, New York.
Okay, and you're full-time?
Yes, yes.
And what's life like over there? What do you learn? What are you studying? What's this all about?
Well, we learn all about things of the church, from theology to church history, patristics, the church fathers, Biblical language is all sorts of fun things, but we learn a lot about just our spiritual lives as well, and try to grow as much as we can.
We don't get too much into the exact hierarchy and all that, so maybe it'd be important. You're a deacon in the church. Now, a deacon gives you certain privileges, or what is that all about?
It gives us certain privileges, yes, but also several responsibilities as well. One of the privileges we are given is we can read the gospel, we can do Vera Perum, the greater entrance in the Armenian church, but the root of the word deacon is from the Greek that means servant, and that's really our main job. We're a special type of servant in the church. We're called to do certain things, such as be out there with the poor and the sick, the elderly, and be servants. That's it.
Wow, you mean to actually serve is a kind of a new concept for us.
It's an old concept, but we've got to renew it, for sure.
And it's a concept that comes to us from Christ.
Absolutely.
He was, I think, our first servant, right? As a servant to come, the story of him kneeling down and washing the feet of the disciples, that always gets to me. Like, how can the Son of God coming down on his knees, and just a beautiful thing in the Gospel of John, chapter 13. Tell me, you said something about you have the right to read gospel. What does that mean? Like, aren't we all allowed to read gospel?
Absolutely, we all are, and we all ought to. But as far as the special responsibility of the deacon in the liturgy, when somebody is reading the gospel in the church in that capacity, it's the word of God being presented in the real sense of the word. We're making it present to the people, and that's a responsibility that one needs to be prepared for. And it's a blessing. It's a gift for us, really.
You know, we do a lot of talking about orthodoxy, and there's always a weight that comes with it. And I know you're not familiar with the podcast, but one of the concepts that we play around with a lot is that, yes, orthodoxy does belong to the past. There is this incredible tradition that comes to us that defines us as Orthodox Christians, but also that we are today a part of that orthodox chain, that as valuable as the past is today, the present. And when you learn about the past, when you learn some of these theological concepts, which I'm sure you do in seminary, in the classes, where's the practical application to that? Like, sometimes we talk about some of the ancient fathers and this is what they taught. How do we bring it into that service, that service dimension that you're talking about?
The thing about tradition, I think, is that if the tradition isn't applicable to our daily lives today, it's dead. And the tradition that was alive yesterday for people is the tradition that's given to us. And if we don't make it living for us today, then that tradition dies, and nobody will be able to continue it. So our part in it is to make it real for us today. Rather, it is real for us today, but realize how exactly we're supposed to be living that out today. And things have not changed as much as we might like to think they have, but we're living that tradition, and it's a part of us.
And I guess, how do we do that? Like, what's important? Like, let's suppose we pick up a book of the early church fathers and we start reading about St. Cyril's message, or we start reading about St. Gregory's teachings. How does that impact us today, 2008?
Well, one of the most simplest and yet profound things that I've learned in seminary is that we need to take all of the fathers, and indeed all of the Bible, all of history, from the perspective of the cross. That is, Christ crucified on the cross. And if we can't glean a meaning from that, then whatever we're reading is indeed meaningless. Because that is the focus of history. That is the focus of God's message. Christ's love, Christ's sacrifice, Christ's forgiveness. That's the central part to all of our lives as Christians.
You mean it's not about us? It's not about the one person?
Absolutely. It becomes about us in a sense when we start to do what Christ has done for us. That is love. That is forgive. That is to be humble. serving one another, going back to the whole concept of being a deacon and Christ being the first servant. That's exactly what it's about. It's not us, it's using Christ, it's Christ showing himself what we are to be as humans. It's not some concept, it's not some ideal. The dean of the seminary, Father Daniel Findikian, what he's repeated over and over to us seminarians is that love is not something out there, something that is tangible, yes, but it's not a concept, it's a person. For us Christians, love is Christ. That's what we're about. Forgiveness isn't something that we do. Forgiveness is a person, it's Christ. And the more that we forgive, the more we are Christ-like. The more that we love, the more we are Christ-like. And that's the focus of the gospel. That's the center of it.
I think that's so well put. How about as far as St. Narcissus, maybe a little bit of plug before? I just appreciate you talking so candidly about this beautiful love and service, and just wanted to give you a couple minutes if you want to say something about St. Narcissus, because I know I've been there a couple times, and it's just one of the most beautiful places on earth to get away from life and just contemplate. So take it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a place, in a way, to get away from life, but in another way to experience life more fully. We pray all the time. We're in the Bible all the time. We're in class almost all day. And we spend a lot of time together as seminarians. And so we learn a lot about each other, learn even more about ourselves and our spiritual lives. And by learning about each other, I believe we also learn more about God. So it's a wonderful place. It's a special place in America on this earth. And I'm definitely blessed to be a part of that family, that community, and to have St. Narcissus in my life.
Well, thank you. You could learn more about St. Narcissus at St. Narcissus, that's spelled NERSESS.EDU. They have a website and all kinds of programs. If you're up in the New York area, check them out. Go by, and just a beautiful place. Ryan, it is a pleasure to have you with us. I'm so glad you made the time to stop by, and wish you the best. God's blessings be with you on your entire ministry.
Thank you, Deadeye. It's been a pleasure for me, too.
I saw a nice little bumper sticker the other day. It says, "Your karma ran over my dogma." And sometimes we get to the point where we don't even know what all of these technical things are about. It always interests me when people come and talk to me about things that happened in the 3rd and 4th century, and yet they're unable to give, unable to love one another. You know, all of the things that Jesus talked about are based on this very simple premise of being able to reach out and love. Being able to do the very simple things that we're all called to do. Why does Jesus always bring children into the foreground and say that unless you become like a child? Think about it. What is that one attribute that all children have that you and I don't? Because life has slapped us in the face so many times, we've become hardened. But the child has this infinite ability to forgive and start brand new. Despite all the difficulties he goes through during a day, he sleeps at night and wakes up with a new understanding of life, a new outlook on life the next day. And that's really the cornerstone of love. The ability to forgive, the ability to put aside the past and realize that you do need to move forward. Moving forward doesn't necessarily mean you forget the past, but it means you have a new outlook on it, taking the past and processing it into positive directions. Today's song, I've been really enjoying playing these songs. And you notice that we're not going with any of the cliche stuff. And certainly today's won't be another cliche one. It's from an artist, Oud Virtuoso, John Bilezikchian. He plays a rendition of Sevanitsa Gnors. This is the Fishermen of Sevan, and I selected it to go with the Bible passage today because if you ever get a chance to go out to Armenia, there's a beautiful monastery right on this island. Sevan is a lake in Armenia, and there is an island. Right now it's a peninsula because the water has receded, but it used to be an island, and on top of this island are two small little chapels. And when you see them, you just really are in awe. Not because there are any monumental achievement or architectural achievement, but because you realize how faithful people must have been that way out in the middle of this island, they've taken stones and constructed this beautiful Armenian chapel where they would come together and sing praises. And I selected this Fisherman of Sevan, this song, because I could imagine that along those shores where the people were fishing, they had an opportunity to look up at that monastery, to look up at that island, and think about specifically this passage, that follow me and I will make you a fisher of people, is follow me and I will make you a fisherman of people. Because as they looked up at that monastery, they had this chance to really think about, contemplate this passage. Follow me and I will make you a fisher of people is just another way of saying, follow me and I will show you how love can make you one with this world. Let's listen to Sevanit Sagnors performed by John Belizic. I hope in those rhythms and in those strums, you could just feel what those fishermen of Sevan were feeling, looking for fish, but all along contemplating on some of the bigger prizes, some of the bigger trophies, which are our relationships, are our ability to love, our ability to really, really make an impact on this life in ways that maybe may seem divine from the outside, but for somebody in the path of Armenian Orthodoxy can understand that it is really our human nature. Our nature is to love. Our nature is to open up and to be at one with everyone. So I hope you enjoyed that song, and I'm really enjoying this opportunity to find these songs and share them with you. You know, we're running up against the clock, and it looks like this is the end of another podcast episode. I want to give you a couple of announcements that might interest you. If you're in the Los Angeles area this weekend, July 18th, there's going to be an incredible concert, which I'd like to encourage you to attend. I will be there, and I'd love to meet you if you're so inclined to come around and introduce yourself, I'd love to meet you. It's called Discover the Many Faces of the Gore Band. Gore goes ethnic. It's going to be at Memorial Park in the heart of Old Town Pasadena. It's this Friday evening at 8 o'clock, July 18th. And the Levitt Pavilion in Memorial Park is a landmark. I'm sure if you get out to Pasadena, most people could tell you about it. And of course, Gore Music. Gore is an incredible musician. I'm really happy to say that we're going to be doing a project with him later this year. Some Armenian Orthodox spiritual music coming out towards the end of this year, and I'll be filling you in more about that. Also, remember at the beginning of the podcast today, we talked about what's going on in Darfur, in Sudan, and especially about the trials. Please make your voice heard. Get out to our website, In His Shoes, or Stop Genocide Now, any one of the main Darfur websites, and make your voice heard. Also, September 5th, you want to mark it in your calendar, we're going to be having an opportunity to make some noise about Darfur when we honor the second recipient of the In His Shoes Person of the Year, Gabriel Saring. That's going to be taking place at the Barnsdall Art Gallery. That's September 5th. Mark it now. There'll be more information coming up later. Well, that's it for this broadcast. I hope you enjoyed being here, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Remember to send in your comments, feedback@epostle.net. Also, make it easy for yourself. Make it easy for your friends. Go to epostle.net, put in your email address, and you will be informed about these podcasts every week when they come out. But please tell your friends about it, and we appreciate all of your comments and all of your support. So with that, for our producer, Susie, for Vatarjan, who's taking Ken's place in the booth this week, and for myself, Father Voskin, thanks for joining us. We look forward to taking the next step with you again.